write it down there.
Last question is reviewing the first bathtub related to such a lower case.
Right in the
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. I've got, I included in your packet a mock-up of what the draft revisions can look like. I thought I'd just kind of walk through them here real quick and just let me know what you think, if this is on target or needs to be further revised. One is to include a definition for what an accessory dwelling unit is. This is the same definition that's used in the model code, DLC's model code for small cities, but it's also, I noticed, used by other jurisdictions, larger ones like Portland. So, you know, it looks like it more or less addresses what, you know, we've been driving at in terms of defining what an accessory dwelling unit is, you know, a second dwelling unit created on a lot with a house, attached house, or manufactured home, and then making it clear that the second unit's auxiliary to and always smaller than the primary unit. Then under the zoning districts, added in accessory dwelling unit as a residential type that's permitted in each of the residential districts. And so that's really the only change in, under the zoning districts chapter. And then the standards I put in under the accessory uses and structures section, since it is actually an accessory use. So that's chapter 14.16. Now there's a couple different approaches, and maybe for clarity, it'd be better to have the development standards for all other accessory uses separate from the development standards for accessory dwelling units, but this mock-up blends them together. And so the existing development standards for accessory uses were under 14.16.040. I expanded them to apply to accessory dwelling units. Now, the first standard will always be met because there's a more restrictive limitation under the new accessory dwelling units, under 450A, which has to do with the total floor area.
Mm-hmm. That's well, where it seemed confusing to me.
What I could say is, except for, you know, I meant partially put in there, except for accessory dwelling units.
Well, so, yeah, could you make it 040 applies to non-dwelling units,
right?
And 050 applies to accessory dwelling units.
Yeah, there you go.
So I can just put except for ADUs, comma, the maximum floor area.
Yeah, these are accessory buildings. Mm-hmm. It's what, the 1,500 square feet?
Yeah, right.
And the way we got around one of those is one of the things says is if you got it attached to the building, mm-hmm. then it's not an accessory building. That's what we had to do. Okay, I wanted a garage.
Can we go back to
3,000 square feet? So.
Can we go back to 020?
Oh, sure.
The general provision, if this is inclusive of, mm-hmm. of all accessory structures, mm-hmm. it says not intended for habitation by people. And then you go on to talk about accessory dwellings.
Oh, good point. I need to clarify that and make, add ADUs into that. That's fair. Mm-hmm. No, good catch.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Look at that.
Yeah, Bill, who couldn't be here tonight, did email me a comment about the 1,500 versus the 600.
Sure.
And, you know, that he was a little confused about that. And okay. maybe specifying that 040 doesn't apply to...
040A.
Yeah.
Yeah, 040A doesn't apply to okay. ADUs. Okay. Some of the other provisions
Where is the limitations on the ADUs at?
050.
So another one, the maximum height of an accessory building in a residential zoning district shall not exceed that of the primary structure. So is that fine for ADUs as well? I assume that would be.
I think so.
The other would be not to exceed the maximum height of the district. That would be the other way of approaching it.
So I guess that comment supposes that it's not an attached unit, but if you were building an apartment above the garage, then it's attached to the house, and so it's not exceeding the height of the primary.
Maybe. I mean, presumably. It depends on what you're doing. I mean, if if you're building it over the top of the garage, mm-hmm. you know, more likely than not, you're matching up with your existing roof line, but that's not a
but
guarantee.
But not necessarily.
No. Yeah, what if you had a single level home and you're second just, unit over the garage?
Second level of the garage.
Yeah, and you don't have room.
So I mean, I'm fine whatever you guys want to do with that. I mean, that's really the two ways you can go with it. We're limiting all other accessory buildings to the height of the primary structure. Mm-hmm.
But if you're remodeling the primary structure to include a dwelling unit,
that doesn't count because that's part of the building.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying is
for the building apply. If you attach it, only the standards that apply to the building applies to the entire thing. Accessory uses, these things apply to things that are separate from, accessory uses are separate from the main building.
But they can't.
But that's part of the main building.
I know, but we have ADUs that can be inside the building. We're mixing
things. Yeah, if it's on the primary structure, it's part of the primary structure.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that's unclear. So yeah, which standard applies?
It's
maybe it'd be cleaner to just break them out separately.
Is it conceivable to have a 4.16 and a 4.17? Where 4.16 was accessory uses and structures except ADUs, and 4.17.
Well, what I can do is just say the standards 14.16040 apply to all accessory uses other than ADUs, and then 050 applies strictly to ADUs. I can do it that way.
Yeah, that works.
That means I'll just need to duplicate a couple standards, though. That's what I was trying to avoid was duplicating standards, but we're just going to run through it. So in terms of maximum height, what's your preference? I mean, do you want to just say, it's subject to the height limitations of the district?
The
district, whatever it is. Or the primary dwelling unit.
I'd say the district.
I mean, if it's part of the primary dwelling unit, then...
If it's part of the primary dwelling unit, then it's whatever is in the district. But okay. I think your standards for accessory buildings apply if it's a separate building.
Can you word it that way? And I would agree with that. If it's a separate building, not attached to the primary dwelling unit, then the height restrictions apply. If it is a remodel of the primary.
Can we just back reference it? Say that if it's a separate building, not attached to the primary dwelling, then these standards up here.
Primary height to the primary building.
Well, I just rebuild it down here as a separate one, and you just have to be clear. So I just try to understand where you guys are coming from is that if it's part of the primary structure, it's the height limit of the district. If it's independent of the primary structure, like it's over a garage, you want it to not exceed the height of the primary structure. Am I hearing that correctly?
I heard if it's a separate structure entirely, then it can't exceed the height of the primary.
That's
but if
what
it's a garage, and a one, you know, a ranch house with a garage, you ought to be able to, with an attached garage.
Right.
You shouldn't be able to build an apartment above it that's higher than the rest of the house.
But we're saying, okay, now you got a house and you got a separate garage.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it's a separate garage, then you're limited by the height restriction.
Correct.
Okay.
Of the primary dwelling.
Accessory dwellings. If it's separate garage,
then you're...
If it's attached, it's the building.
I think you're saying the same thing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I'm just... So in other words...
I'm just saying the way I think I understand this is we got a building here and a garage over here. This garage that's separate cannot exceed the height of the house over here.
Correct.
Regardless of whether or not it gets an ADU in or whatever, those standards apply.
I would say that's correct.
You say?
Yeah.
And then there's ways to get around it. All you have to do is attach it. You put a wall between it.
But if it's part of the primary dwelling, mm-hmm. then it's just the height limits of the district.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay. Now that we're all saying the same thing, the same way.
All together now.
Accessory buildings shall not extend beyond the required front yard setback line adjacent lots and parcels. So I would assume that you'd want that same type of version applied to ADUs.
I think so.
This is one. This one I wasn't sure where you'd land on it, which is this last one, D, which allows basically a reduced rear yard setback, basically for small like storage sheds and things of that nature.
Yeah,
you think that same
allowance slash
yay or nay should that apply to a residential occupancy? Because again, setbacks are largely about privacy. So, I mean, you can write this up. You could not allow that provision for ADUs, or you could allow that provision for ADUs. I just wasn't sure where you wanted to go with that.
Why is it 625 versus 600? I didn't quite understand why there would be any difference.
When the... And maybe the cleanest thing is just not to have this provision apply to ADUs at all. But what the concept was when this language was put into the code for accessory dwelling unit, for accessory buildings, excuse me, was that, you know, small sheds could be put relatively close to the property line without causing issues.
Right. And that's
large, giant accessory buildings for housing, you know, RVs and all that other stuff shouldn't be allowed that close because it's just a way of maximizing structural mass on a lot. That's what I recall from our conversation.
Structure okay, but not okay. It's got to be further up.
Okay. No to ADU. All right, now basically, when I do the next draft for hearing, there'll be 050 will be for accessory buildings and structures other than ADUs. Mm-hmm. 050 will be for ADUs only. So okay. They'll just break it out that way.
Okay.
So here are the standards for ADUs, and we talked about these at the work session, so if I capture them all. So floor area, accessory dwelling unit shall not exceed 600 square feet of floor area or 50% of the area in primary dwelling, whichever is less. That's what I thought we had agreed upon.
Mm-hmm.
Type, accessory dwelling units may be a portion of the primary dwelling attached to a garage or a separate freestanding unit. One unit. You know, maximum one accessory dwelling units allowed per lot or parcel. Exemption from density limits. You know, accessory dwelling units are exempt from the housing density standards of residential zoning districts. Architecture, exterior materials used to construct an accessory dwelling unit shall be the same as those of the primary dwelling or garage. Is that fair? I did add the garage piece because just trying to link it up. I mean, so if it's over a garage, it needs to match up with a garage may not be consistent with the house.
Does that, I mean, you can use the same type of materials, but it won't may not have the same architectural theme. Hmm. And do you want it to have the same architectural theme as the...
That's where it gets discretionary, though. That's the hard part. You know,
I understand, but, Cape Cod cottage style versus Idaho ranch style is very different.
Be tough to find language, though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be okay if the exterior materials are, I don't know that we could get into appearance. I mean, we don't regulate the architectural appearance of anything else in any of the districts outside of the Nye Beach overlay. That's the only place where we actually have standards, design standards for architectural appearance. But if they're using the same materials, you know, it's, at least it's going to look like the rest of whatever it's on, I mean, more or less, or should.
Can we say exterior materials and colors? Hmm. Or in finishes or something?
No,
I don't think you want to go down that road.
I mean, I can use brick and mortar and wood and make something totally different from brick and wood of the primary residence. But
and there's a good chance they'll be repainting a lot of these anyway. Yeah. Old same thing, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, in a lot of those cases when they're doing an addition.
Big fish.
Hey, Mark.
Accessory dwelling units shall share water, sewer, electric, and gas connections with the primary dwelling. So that was just being very specific about which connections had to be shared. then there's the owner-occupied, either the primary residence or accessory dwelling, shall be owner-occupied. The property owner shall prepare and record covenant of deed restriction and form acceptance of the city provided future owners notice of that requirement. That was And then there's the off-street parking requirement of one off-street parking space shall be provided for each accessory dwelling unit. That's in addition to off-street parking, the standard applied to the primary dwelling. Now, I would put out there that it might be worth foregoing the off-street parking requirement because that would allow us to not subject them to system development charges. But if we're requiring off-street parking, we're basically saying it's having an impact on the system, and therefore we're going to have to charge SDCs.
And how much is the SDCs?
For transportation, you're looking at a little over $1,000 per dwelling unit right now.
For additional trips? Is that what it's based on?
No, it'd be a dwelling unit basis, though. I mean, it's an EDU, so...
Would the school district also be able to impose their
school piece? District's going to get their piece out of it, yeah, because it's a construction excise tax, so it's just for additional square footage.
What is, like, what are you talking, $500?
Dollar per square foot.
Dollar per square foot.
So you're probably going about $600 tops.
Well, why would you want to, from the city's point of view, why would you want to waive?
Yeah.
System development charge.
Well, part of it is, do you realistically expect that this is going to have an impact on the system? Now, for water and sewer connections, it can't because it's using the same meter. So, and we're a meter-based SDC charge, so if they're required to use the same meter, they're not having an additional impact on the system. But if this is about, you know, allowing people to care for their elderly parents and whatnot, and with the owner occupancy requirement in terms of the deed restriction, you are ratcheting things down a bit.
Yeah, it could also rent it out to a student that's coming and going back and forth to college or whatever.
Or an old, or 10 students.
10 students. And increasing the number, amount of traffic on the road.
What is the percentage that you would actually collect? So if it's $1,000, do you anticipate that the city would really receive that?
Yeah, okay. We would. I mean, with system development charges, they don't get a building permit until they're paid.
Right.
So it's, you know, we would. It's formula based, and so everybody gets charged the same amount.
I think we ought to keep it for a couple of reasons. A, you want them to really want to put the ADU in. And B, we need the money.
That's right.
I mean,
we need
to cover the costs, and
we built
it that way, and it's a dwelling unit. We're adding a dwelling unit, so it needs to get charged. I mean, granted, we can waive the water and gas.
Well, it automatically, just per the SDC ordinance, because it's tied to the same meter. They're not constructed.
That's my feeling.
Okay. Just wanted to ask.
Why did you feel we should not include the additional off-street parking?
I think there's a legitimate case to be made if this is actually being utilized, or if this is set up so that this is really being utilized only by folks that are, you know, you're caring for your elder parents and stuff. They don't really drive a whole lot. I mean, I think there's a case to be said.
But they may have caregivers that come and go.
Yeah.
They could.
Mm-hmm. I've been looking at it macro scale. It's not generating level of traffic.
Could have a purple each with a car.
If you had an adult college student, they are going to be coming and going.
Yeah, sure. No, that's true.
Is that, what do you realistically, from your experience, expect out of these things? Are most of them going to be mother-in-law's places? Are most of them going to be little rental places to try and generate some income? Or
You're probably going to see a little bit of both, unless you really ratchet it down tight to make sure it's for, you know, family, elderly.
Well, the cost to construct is not going to be paid back by rent. I mean, that's a pretty significant capital investment.
Oh, that's true. You're right.
And rents, it's not a pencil, it's a rental.
No.
But after the old folks pass away,
that's going to become an option.
Yeah. Well, if they already have two off-street parking places,
well, I look at it as increasing the number of cars.
It is. There's no question.
But they add another party to it.
Put a provision in there that anybody living in there isn't allowed to drive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd go over a big...
Bicycles.
Force that one.
Yeah, let's put that out in the Northwest.
We'll get Peggy a shotgun if she can go out and...
There you go. Enforcer.
Enforcer.
Okay. All right, we'll leave that provision as is. Does that language look okay?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then 060 was the conditional use approval option that you wanted if one or more of the standards cannot be met in order to seek
And that's where they can count if they have a problem with the parking. And they can make a conditional use. So.
This was very comprehensive. I mean, it's got a lot in it.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and make those changes then, and this will go for public hearing at your second meeting in May. We had to do the DLCD notice on it. That's why it's not going to be until then.
Okay, next up is review of the appeal procedure.
Yeah, I thought it might be helpful since you guys haven't, I don't remember it. If you guys have had an appeal since I've been here, so
we had one. Maybe I think it was when Jim was still here.
Last one I think was on height.
I think he's talking about you.
No, Jim Braithwaite.
Oh, James.
Oh, James.
My predecessor.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think that was the last appeal.
Whatever his name is, the guy that became a house pro.
Either. So anyway, I thought I'd kind of just run through the appeals procedure here. I attached the whole thing just so you have it for reference, but I highlighted the stuff that I really actually want to talk about, which is the relevant stuff on the hearings procedure. So I'm going to just move ahead. It's first piece is under 1452.080, hearings procedure, quasi-judicial. And the quasi-judicial procedure is a little bit different than the legislative. This is where you have to be very clear about spelling out the nature and general conduct of the hearing. And I'll be putting together a custom script for Jim on this one that covers all of that. This is where you need to make sure to speak to ex parte contacts, bias, if you've had ex parte contacts, all you're obligated to do is disclose them. They can challenge you. That doesn't mean you have to step down. That just goes into the record. So if you've, done a site visit or talked to so-and-so or attended a hearing where it was discussed or whatever, or a meeting where it was discussed, just make sure it's on the record that that's disclosed as an ex parte contact. If, say, the appellant says, well, I take issue with that, they can take issue with that. That does not mean you have to step down. So I just want to be clear about that. That is your call as a commission member, what you want to do with that. Now, if you have if you had a fiduciary stake in it, Stephen Brothers or something, then you have to step down. You have to disclose it and step down. I mean, that is a hard and fast rule. So, and that's discussed under disqualification. Anybody who has a direct financial interest in it.
What about reading stuff in the paper and stuff? That considered ex parte contact?
I would go ahead and disclose it.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
I've been keeping up on that.
What if you lived on John Moore? Is that a financial?
No.
Okay.
No. This doesn't apply to you guys here, but obviously, if you had a business relationship with them, you would have to step down.
What's the notice area for this?
200 feet. So if you own property within
John Moore all the way out there?
It's 200 feet from the property boundary, which would be the 15-acre leaseholding down at the, off Bay Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
Or Bay Road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, South Bay Boulevard.
Yeah, not the Hall Road.
Okay.
The Hall Road is just accessed like it is to any other development.
Do you think it would be wise to include that in the notice pool?
No, we need to stick to procedure. Well, we have, for the purpose of, just so you know, for the purpose of the appeal hearing, we have notified everybody within the notification area, which we're actually not required to do for the appeal. We've already done that once for the staff level. But we also obviously notified everybody who provided comment through the comment period. So it's like, okay, 90 people. Those folks, we have to provide notice of the appeal hearing. So they've all, so anybody who's participated in the process received written notice of the appeal hearing.
Now, is it only regarding the Teven Brothers as opposed to that site which was a previous log yard?
What do you mean?
Well, I had a lot of contact with the previous log yard.
Oh, I see. For disclosure? No. The prior use is not.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. No, okay. I understand what you're saying.
With regard to the present appeal.
Can only be with regard to the present application, the present proposal. And you can certainly, if you feel that you cannot decide it in an impartial manner, just say that's how you feel and you can step down. Again, then we already talked about the ex parte contacts and, you know, include site visits and newspaper stuff. I would go ahead and disclose it. Anything that is anything related to this project that you've had contact, I just put it out on the record. It's the cleanest way to do it. They can, like I said, they can challenge your, you know, objectivity in participating as a member of the decision making body. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to step down. That just means they can put it out there. Well, hopefully we don't get to this. Hopefully. We don't have to count abstaining members to try to get a quorum. But that's always out there.
Qualified, disqualified members.
I think we have a procedure for doing that. I remember that.
That's sitting here.
Yeah. Well, that's right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My hope is back and recertify it.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have to get into that aspect of it. I'll have the procedures with me in case we run into it, but I'm expecting we're going to have a full quorum of folks that are stepping down on this appeal.
I will be absent.
Okay, just because you can't make the meeting?
I can't make the meeting. Okay. Do you expect this to go on to more than one meeting of
I expect that there'll be two meetings because I don't think a decision's going to happen. But because we bring the final order and findings to the follow-up, we're not going to have a final order and findings here. Exactly. The whole thing's going to be taking testimony.
I've asked because I've asked Wanda to provide me with all of the material because I would ultimately be at the subsequent meeting where I suppose I...
We can certainly do that.
I could vote if I have reviewed all of the material. I mean, according, I asked that because of point seven here. Participation by an absent member.
Sure.
Yeah, I've had to do that before where I've listened to the tapes and all looked at all the material and then,
I would like to do that if possible.
Well, if we hold the comments pro and con or otherwise to the specific item on appeal, I think we should be able to hear everybody that wants to say something in one night. If we allow them to talk about their uncle who had a dairy farm across the street, well, that's what they got into last time. And somebody's aunt used to own a place out there, and they had tulips. And after 15 minutes, you say, I think the person just wanted to get up and be heard.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's well within your purview to require anybody who testifies on an appeal to first state the standard in which they do not believe has been met before they get into their testimony. And you might want to do that in this case. And that will discourage people from... But it's up... Jim, it's up... As a chair, it's up to you to kind of crowd control that. If somebody gets up and starts going off on a tangent, you'd have to say, excuse me, ma'am, sir, can't
you? Well, even to do that as a follow-up question, just be sure, which standard are you saying hasn't been met?
And that's going to help.
If we do that, that's the first two.
One of the standards is any anything you think could apply. I mean, that's what it says in the thing. Anything you think could apply to the standards.
But you want to know what that is. I mean, so...
Where are we applying that?
Yeah.
Why wasn't that standard applied? But you want to know what that is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to want them to come up and say, okay, we think X standard in the subdivision code should have been applied to this. Yeah. And they can state their reason. But then at least you have it on the record. This is a standard that they felt wasn't applied or wasn't appropriately applied. And so I really would encourage you to...
Doesn't it say that the chair can limit the time?
Yep.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
Speaker. 3 minutes.
Or whatever he feels appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the city council uses.
I know, but I hate that with a passion.
Yeah. If you've got 100, let's say you've only got 50 people to speak and each one wants 20 minutes, I got to tell you, Jim, last time that got old pretty.
We didn't actually, I don't think we did that bad on the geologic hazards. We only had a few people go off the rails. Most of them stayed on point. And the problem is when you give them a 3 minute limit, I know how it affects me. When I'm sitting there, I start talking really fast and hoping I can get through everything that's.
Well, if they stick to the point in question, if they have reasonable things to say, that's not a question. The ones that took 15 or 20 minutes, I have to tell you, after 2 or 3 minutes, they were just off on a tangent and they got old.
You should be able to get all their points in within 3 to 4 minutes. 5 minutes.
Yeah, and if somebody gets up and says, "I agree with what these other people have said," you know, that would be nice.
Now, are we gonna ask for questions from the commissioners?
Questions of them?
Yeah. If commissioners want to question somebody,
sure,
they got to go ahead and question.
After they speak.
Yeah. After they speak.
Sure.
Just follow up for clarification.
I that in here.
So I'm going to skip past some of the quorum stuff because that is, we can just deal with that. We talked about kind of regulating the course of the quorum of the meeting, proposing reasonable limitations on the number of folks, you know, setting reasonable time limits, all of that. That's all fair game. I don't know that Stephen Brothers is going to elect to participate in the appeal hearing. So you may not have an applicant.
Every time I see that, I think they'd be smart not to be there.
That's their call.
I know.
They've indicated that they may not. I advise everybody. I've advised that they should have somebody there representing their interests. That's their call, certainly. If they're not prepared to do that, they should at least put something in writing to the commission saying what their thoughts are on the decision and the appeal, but ultimately, that's their call. So you may not have at the hearing an applicant, which you're rebuttaled in and goes out the door. So you're not going to be an applicant, you're strictly taking testimony from the appellants. And those who attend in support of the decision, they're still going to be, I expect, people to be there in support of the decision as well, even if they're not the applicant.
I did notice that one or two of the geological hazard hearings was a little disorganized as to who was going to speak when. It seemed to me that maybe there were little slips. One of them, there was little slips of paper and then got handed in to Peggy or Wanda. Another one, there's a sign up by the front door that sometimes didn't make it up to the front in a timely manner. You might just want to think about the procedure for how people sign up to speak and get it a little bit more
organized. We've done that before.
We'll get slips out. I think the order of the proceeding is called out for in here. We'll get slips out, but one of the things Jimmy might want to do, and we can put it in the script too, is that once you get through the slips, is there anybody else who didn't have a chance to sign up who wants to testify, just to make sure we
cover everybody.
Right.
And then also, I guess, we run the applicant, if he's not there, then we ask for anybody else that wants to argue in favor of the...
Right. Right.
Up there, technically what's being appealed is the is the report.
The decision. Yeah.
The decision based on the technical report.
Correct.
And so any disagreement would have to be based on the technical report of the engineers that were hired by the opposition. Is that correct? I mean, it's the decision that's being appealed. I agree, but the arguments seem to me would have to be technical and engineering ones.
Potentially. I mean, there may be arguments, too, that there are certain standards that should have been applied that weren't applied. That wouldn't be a technical argument. That would be an argument more in terms of city code requirements. But more likely you're going to have, you know, it's going to be technical information that's being challenged. You are not bound by a staff decision. This is what we call a de novo hearing, which means it's a full evidentiary hearing. You're making the decision as if anew. That's what de novo means. So new testimony can come in that wasn't available at the time this decision was prepared. You know, that's all fair game at this point. So just want to be clear, this is a full-out evidentiary hearing as if a decision had never been rendered. Obviously, you have the benefit of the original decision and the materials that were referenced there, but decision is if anew.
You will provide us with a copy of their written appeal?
Yes, that will be in your packet.
Good, excellent.
You will have a copy of the appeal, you will have a copy. I will do a staff report responding to the appeal as well for your benefit, so you have that.
Can you, put that on the web early so we can take a look at it?
I'll do the best I can.
Will the engineering people be there that were responsible for the reports?
Well, that's what I said. Teven may not have somebody there, which means they may not have
their technical people
there. So you'll just have the report in that case. However, the city engineer will be there. So, and the city engineer is the one per the code that has to determine sufficiency of some of that technical stuff. So there will be somebody other than the appellant there that you can pose questions to.
Can I get the conduct of participants printed on the top of the sign-up sheet? That would make my day right there.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
That probably should cover part of it, at least, you know, cheering applause.
Yeah. Well, this also says the proponents should have the first opportunity to speak and then the opponents. So if we simply take a list of who signed up first, they wouldn't necessarily be in that order, unless you have two separate
sheets. Segregate it. And
yeah.
Proponents.
Yeah.
Oh. And some people would be arguing both sides, so
maybe.
Well, you know, and so you take them on whichever. I don't know. Usually we take them in the opponent side, but.
Well, either that, or we just take them in the order that they signed up, no matter how they feel about it.
If we don't have an applicant there. I don't know that we need.
I would follow the process as closely as possible on this, because one of the grounds that somebody who can object to your decision is the failure to follow procedures. So, and while we normally don't have to stress that too much because it's not a contested case, this is clearly a contested case, and we want to be pretty careful.
I agree. And they will probably have an attorney representing them there, the appellant.
Continuance is, you are not obligated to be granted continuance if one's requested. You are, and I'll put this in the script, you are obligated to leave the record open for a period of days if that is requested. 7 days, I believe, is by statute if that is requested. So if somebody hears something, for example, that they want to respond to, and said, hey, look, I didn't have enough time to respond to this the first time I heard this, you know, particular issue, they can request that the record be left open, and you are obligated to do that. But you're not obligated to continue it to another date.
And then they would file a written letter what they wanted to say.
Exactly. If you leave the record open, yeah, they would just have to submit their written testimony within that period of time.
Well, that would be nice.
So
there won't be any deliberations at this point.
Well,
my definition.
Here's what I intended. I will not have findings of fact and a final order prepared for this. I did talk to our attorney about that specifically, and she agreed that that would not be a wise course of action on our part, city staff's part at this point. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a full evidentiary hearing. Take the testimony. What I will be looking for, though, from the Planning Commission is direction as to how you want the findings prepared. You want findings prepared to support the decision. You want findings prepared to go a different direction. And if you want to go a different direction, what is it, so that I have enough clarity as to how to prepare those findings for you to consider. So, I mean, that's what I will be looking for after you've taken the testimony. I mean, you can close the hearing and you have your deliberations, and you can say, "Look, I'll see if I can provide some guidance in terms of potential motions for you, if that'll help."
Okay.
Well, but if the records be left open for a week, you really can't even start the deliberations.
Well, yeah, you have to get past that question first. So once you know, you close the hearing, we're closing the record, then you move to deliberation.
Then if somebody asks for the 7 days, then we can't deliberate.
Then you can't really, correct.
Okay.
Right. That's just
but
the
they
question.
Have to ask for it. It's not
automatic. Right, they have to ask for it.
Okay, and so rebuttal is strictly by the applicant, right? So if the applicant doesn't show up, there's no rebuttal.
Correct.
Okay.
Close the hearing, deliberate, decision, adoption, findings of fact, and final decision. So the
so if somebody says they want the 7 days, then we just have to continue the hearing to the we have to continue deliberations.
No, we leave it open. We don't continue the hearing.
Right. Hearing's closed. Record is left open for written testimony only for that period. And then you pick up deliberations at your next meeting.
Okay.
I could prepare findings, but then it gets dicey.
No. Can't put the cart before the horse.
I know. Because then I'm guessing.
Right.
It's kind of tough.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that, we'll cross that bridge if we come to it. Appeals under 1452-100. Talks about standing. Anybody basically who has appeared and provided testimony has standing. So that's probably close to 90 people at this point. The appeal document has to have certain things. The appeal document had those things. I'll be noting that in the staff report, but it has those required elements. The scope of review, again, I've kind of covered that. It's de novo for, because there hasn't been an evidentiary, hasn't been a hearing held yet, so it has to be de novo. It does, if it gets appealed beyond you guys, though, to the city council is not obligated to hold an evidentiary hearing. Nor are they actually even obligated to hold a hearing. They could accept your decision without holding a hearing. Or they can hold a meeting, hearing where the testimony is limited to information that's already in the record. So they can get up and talk, but they can only talk about stuff that's already been submitted.
Is there any chance that the appeal was not made within the 15 days?
No, the appeal is timely.
All right. Sorry, Mark.
Nice try.
I just like it to be legal and proper.
I will include in the staff report where we are within the 120-day clock. Be cognizant of the fact we do have to make, the city has to make a final decision, and that means a final decision following all appeals within 120 days. But the 120 days didn't start until we had a complete application from the applicant, and that wasn't until late February. Because the structural analysis was the last piece that came in. So I'll have it tabulated. That's about it.
Sounds simple.
We did move it up to 6 p.m. We didn't have a work session. Nothing compelling for a work session, so I thought we'd just move it up to the hearing started earlier, since it's labeled to take quite a bit of time.
Can we have something else on the agenda?
Yeah. I'll go with that.
Okay.
That's why I can't find it. All right. The Port of Newport, port facilities are part of our comprehensive plan. It's part of our public facilities element. Port facilities, just like water, sewer, transportation, are considered part of airport. That's all considered part of the public facilities element of our comprehensive plan. And in fact, the Newport Urban Renewal Agency funded the last port facilities capital plan and strategic plan back in the late 80s. And it was done as a formal amendment to the comprehensive plan at that time. It was like 86, I think, or 87. And this time around, the port paid for it themselves. They did their own strategic plan and new capital improvement plan. And that's what I included in your packet. The original port facilities, this is the existing port facilities language, which is in there. I put it in there for you to take a look at. It talks about what some of the different capital projects are. There are still some of them listed, as you would expect. Some of the big ticket items they haven't addressed yet. Say Port Dock 7, some of the Port Dock 7 work, for example, hasn't been done, and just haven't had the resources to do it. Oddly enough, we don't have any policies or goals regarding the port facilities. And one of the things that we might want to think about, well, one is we probably should amend the comp plan to reflect the current port capital plan. You'll need to provide direction for me to do that, bring that to you, because it's an amendment to the comprehensive plan. The simplest way would be for us to just simply put in all of the capital projects that they have listed and then just take language out of their strategic plan where appropriate to basically reproduce what's in our plan right now. And then put together a policy or goal or two that talks about collaboration and the fact that these are priorities for the city, just as they are priorities for the port, which would then strengthen our respective ability to go after grant funds like Connect Oregon funds, because we can partner and we can point to these types of policy documents saying this is something that's not only been adopted by the Port Commission, but it's been adopted by City Council, and we collectively agree that these are projects that need to be pursued. Through this process, though, and through looking at some of these capital projects, if there's anything in here you don't think should be a city priority, this would be the process to kick it out of the box, so to speak. Say, okay, we're putting this, you know, two-thirds of the list in, but the last third we don't think is appropriate for ABC reasons, and we don't include them in the city's complex. That doesn't mean they're not a port priority, but I'm just saying that you have that option. But I've reviewed it. I don't see anything in here that would warrant changes to our zoning or to our estuary rules. Nothing that the port's proposing would be, for example, they're not proposing to extend port facilities into natural or conservation areas in the bay. They're sticking with the existing developed areas, and so there's no reason that we have to get into the estuary rules. They're not proposing uses of port facilities that are inconsistent with the existing zoning. It's a pretty modest scope of stuff really, that they've got in here. I mean, new fish cleaning stations, repairing existing port commercial docks like Port Dock 7 or the fishing pier down in South Beach, stuff like that's what they have on this list. And it's not inconsequential, there's some pretty good sized dollar figures associated with some of these projects. But I think their capital facilities plan does a nice job of kind of laying that out. There are certain things that I think that are fit kind of neatly with, you know, our own plans, such as the looping the water system out on the north side over by basically where Tiemann Brothers is looking to locate. You know, that, you know, ties with our water facilities plans, and so you have that cross connection there. So
that's the international terminal firewater Luna.
Yeah. Line loop. Yeah, over there at that side. And that's something that needs to be done, certainly. So
it looks like the most expensive part of project sub priority one project is the marina dredging.
Yeah,
4.7 mil.
Yep. And, you know, and you can, like I said, I think the easiest thing would just be to take this and put it in more or less verbatim the way it is, but we can monkey around with that too if you feel that's appropriate, because these would be the city's relative priority, you know, view of what the priority should be.
I'm good with it as is. I think it goes well. It's a good plan. It's laid out. It's prioritized.
Mm-hmm. Clean.
It's
very clean.
I'm happy with that.
There's apparently a lot of work went into this.
Don and I talked. We were in agreement that this is a good idea to proceed. This would help the port, help the city too. Should we need to partner with them on this? I just need your more or less go ahead and start. It's not going to take too much work to put this in.
Okay. Say go ahead.
Go for it.
Yeah.
And that's going to replace this document,
right? Yeah, from the late 80s.
Yeah. The typewritten one?
Yeah.
Yeah. The type one.
Nice.
That is all that I had for the work session.
Okay. Anything else? Very nice. We're adjourned then.
So tomorrow, I can't leave town, so I can't go to Staten. So I'm going to be working the scoreboard.
Tomorrow,
Dave.
I think that's really.